Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
When you're down and troubled and you need a helping hand.
We're back. 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. And when I need a friend, when I'm down in trouble, or when I'm not down in trouble, I call on my friend Gary Moore. He's always there to help me. He's always been a good friend to me, and he's an outstanding member of our Brain Trust. He's a friend to you, too, whether you know it or not. Gary is a former vice president of investments for Payne Weber. He now has his own investment company, has now for some time. He's the author of a number of books. He's a disciple of Sir John Templeton, which impresses the heck out of me. And he's also the author of a brand spanking new book, Faithful Finances 101. Gary Moore, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back with you, Jim. I thought you were going to tell me you knew James Taylor for a minute.
No, not sweet. I know sweet baby James, but only in the way that fans know him. But now you're my friend. And Gary, you got a brand new book out. It's beautiful. It's well done. Congratulations. By the way, folks, it's published by Templeton Foundation Press. It's called Faithful Finances 101, from the poverty of fear and greed to the riches of spiritual investing. Gary, your book focuses on something that you do all the time, and that's focusing on the biblical ethic of wealth creation.
That's true.
Now, what I want to know is, why is this important?
Several years ago, I noticed that Sir John, when people would ask him what he attributes his success to, he would never say, you know, having gone to Yale, become a Rhodes Scholar, going to Oxford, studying law, or whatever. He would say, well, it's biblical principles. And that's the foundation. Whether you're religious or not, or understand that you are or not, morality has to come from somewhere, Jim. And there's about three moralities that drifts around in the United States. And one of them is the Judeo-Christian morality, and then there are a couple of others. But most people have ultimate values when they're in business, and a lot of times I find they don't even understand that. And indeed, they're religions in the sense that they are ultimate values to which you live by. And what I try to do in this book is help people understand the various moralities that are out there, and then decide that I try not to get into theistic arguments, if you will. That's for the theologians who are more learned than I am. But to help you understand that as you go through life making business decisions day in and day out, which one of these that you operate in. And I think that's crucial, as Sir John tried to tell us over the years.
And you use the Bible as your model.
Yes, I do. And church tradition, we have to understand that even if you're devoutly religious and devoutly conservative, there are economic principles of the Bible that have changed over the years as we have moved from an agricultural society, which everybody was in the times of the Bible, and even were at the beginning, say, of the last century in the United States. We were basically an agricultural society.
Even in those days, even people who weren't agrarian were a lot closer to the land than they are now.
Absolutely, very directly connected to it. And even then, you know, there were things like, you know, let your animals rest if you were, you know, going around in a carriage and stuff. Give your horse a day off and let it rest, and so on. And these were old principles, not that they're necessarily confined to the biblical ethic, but they're just good, solid principles that we pick up from somewhere, whether we know it or not. But what the difference is that as our culture changed in the last century and we went from having our wealth in sheep and goats and land and so on to being in mutual funds, CDs, and so on, that there became a growing distance between our wealth. Most wealth today is what we call intangible. It's pieces of paper that represent wealth, but we're not directly connected to it like we were on the land. And what I wanted to do, as I saw all the things that were going on Wall Street, is to say, guys, let's go back and reconsider some of these old ethics and principles.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say that the Bible has a lot to say about money. You use the word money, and you say how we should think about it, and how we should earn it, and what we should do with it.
And
you just told us a little bit why you think the 21st century is different from the last century, or certainly than the 19th century. But why do you focus on money?
Well, and in a way, I probably shouldn't. I hope I relate as much to wealth. One of the things I try to point out in the book is that the nature of wealth is amoral. Amoral. There's the tithe and mammon in the Bible even are opposite sides of the same coin. The other thing we need to understand, Jim, is they didn't necessarily understand what capital is, which is productive money. Back then, money was something that was stored. It might be better compared to a savings account today. It's a store of wealth that's immediately available to fulfill your needs. It wasn't necessarily money that was employed gainfully to create wealth for your neighbors and so on. And when the Bible speaks of passages like building bigger barns, what it was really opposed to, whereas barns in our day even are used as temporary storage houses on the way to market, back then, bigger barns meant that someone was hoarding. And I try to explain to people the difference of capital. For example, I have a CD in the inner cities of Chicago that's never done me any good whatsoever. I reinvest the interest. It'll educate my son one day and so on. But it's building houses and churches and so on in the inner cities of Chicago. That's capital. We need to think of that in a different way than what we think about hoarding, because in essence, I gave up current consumption in order to build houses in the inner cities and so on to educate my son. And so many times, pastors in particular who are relatively ignorant, not that they're stupid, but they're ignorant about money and economics, would look at that CD and say, well, Gary, that's all wrong because you're one of the rich. When indeed what I've done is sacrifice for the betterment of my son, for my neighbors, and so on, and it's a moral virtue, Jim. And that's where I think so many religious people get so confused about wealth management.
Gary, stand by. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, Gary says Christians have a historic obligation and opportunity to shape a better world. And when we come back, I'm going to ask him about the other folks besides the Christian. What about them? Right after these messages, 20 after, stay with us. The book is called Faithful Finances 101 by Gary Moore. We're back. It's 23 after. Gary Moore is our guest and our good friend and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. The author of the new book, Faithful Finances 101, From Poverty of Fear and Greed to the Riches of Spiritual Investing. And Gary, you say in your book that Christians have a historic obligation and opportunity to shape a better world. And what I want to know is, why do you focus on Christians? Is it just Christians, or do other folks out there have an opportunity and an obligation?
Well, I think it's just that's what I know about. If I were a Muslim, I'd be writing about the Muslim obligation, if you will. But one thing I do hope, and one of the reviews said, is that even though I write from the perspective of a conservative, perhaps even evangelical Christian, that I do respect other faiths. And in the book, I try to talk about I went to Africa one time with the idea of explaining to them that Christianity had as many ideas about rebuilding political economy that was in Uganda after Idi Amin destroyed it as what Islam did, which was making inroads into Uganda. And I came away deeply respectful of the Islamic faith when it comes to economic matters. Now, again, the theists are always going to debate the nature of the divinity, if you will. But as far as economics is concerned, Jim, what we need to remember today is that the Jewish people, the Muslims, and the Christians are all what we call people of the book. This all started, if you go to the earliest parts of the Bible, Abraham and Lot are described as being wealthy people who were fighting over prime grazing lands. And Abraham said, Lot, you take the best land, I'll take what's left, because we are brothers and we shouldn't be fighting. The point is that Abraham preferred brotherhood or love to material wealth. And that's when God came down and said, Abraham, you're my guy. Okay, that's the beginning of the covenant. And what all of the people of the book should understand, all these fights over the Temple Mount, if Abraham were there, our ultimate patriarch, perhaps he would say, you guys take the best part of the Temple Mount, and I'll take what's left over. And the irony is God came down and said, Abraham, even though you did the seemingly irrational thing of giving up the best part of the land, I'm going to bless you. And that's been the paradox of those three faiths' approaches to wealth ever since the days of Abraham, that if you prefer brotherhood and love and caring for your neighbors and so on, that it will bless you. And that's so terribly important to understand about all three faiths, Jim.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things that I try to remind people about, and I try to think about myself, that to me is part and parcel of what you were just saying, and that's understanding what happiness is.
Oh, yeah.
People think that money and stuff will make you happy, and I know I've said this before, folks, and you're going to hear me say it again, and I'll say it tomorrow. If you can't be happy without money, you're not going to be happy with money. that's as simple as I can say it. Because, Gary, you talk about, it's along the lines of what's a part of your title of your book, you call fear and greed a condition of poverty.
Oh, it is. You know, Mother Teresa used to say that. She was often asked, why do you have groups of your nuns in the United States? And she says, well, you know, they're among the poorest people on earth, not materially, but certainly spiritually. You know, we have more anxiety and depression in the United States than any other nation. I mean, that is just spiritual poverty. And one of the things that's happening, Jim, is I think we are discovering what you're saying. I'm playing with a paradoxical idea that just because our standard of living is increasing, it doesn't necessarily mean that our way of life is getting better, if you will. The quality of life is increasing. Let me give you an example. I've gone on a diet not a few weeks ago.
Congratulations. I started mine 2 days ago.
Jim, I've lost 20 pounds.
Wow.
I feel so much better and so on. Now, here's the key.
Congratulations.
And, well, the funny thing is, you know, I grew up poor on a farm, Jim, and I'm eating like I did when I was young. We're eating stuff out of the garden and green beans and stuff.
Collard greens.
In other words, I'd probably bankrupt Nabisco today if everybody did what I said, or Pepsi or whatever. So my standard of living, my spending on expensive products, processed foods, and so on, has declined, and making the GDP decline ever so slightly, but my standard of living, quality of life, is actually increasing, and I'm beginning to wonder if we don't need to get to a better measure of the quality of life in the United States than just strictly the GDP. We may be at that point of affluence in this country.
Well, I'll tell you, a few years ago, I've really never chased the dollar. I've never really considered myself to be, you know, that materialistic. I've never said to myself, I want to be a millionaire. But I'll tell you, a few years ago, I started realizing that I wanted to gravitate toward things, whatever that might be, relationships, physical possessions, whatever it might be, things that made me happy.
But Jim, here's the paradox of that. Harvard Business School has actually tracked, I can't remember the number, but it was over 100.
Got 20 seconds.
And what they found is they divided students into two groups, those who wanted wealth, those who wanted to do their own thing, if you will, and what their heart told them. 10, 20 years later, they found out all the millionaires came from the second group, not the first group.
What their heart told them.
There's a paradox there.
Yeah. Gary, will you come back and talk about some more about this with us?
Absolutely.
Where's the book available?
Amazon.com is probably the easiest way to get it.
Faithful Finances 101 by Gary Moore. Thanks, Gary. See you next time.
Take care, Jim.
Quick break, 29 after. Right back with Lois Geller. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.